Top of the morning to you, or afternoon or evening, whenever you may be listening. Welcome to Chip Time, Season 3, Episode 7. And we are fired up to be here for today's episode. Absolutely loaded interview today with an awesome guest who I was thrilled to connect with. And such a loaded interview that we're going to keep this intro ultra short. This man was gracious with his time, calling in all the way from an offshore island in South Bend, Indiana, my father's hometown. Shout out to the South Bend Chocolate Factory. If you've never experienced those chocolate turtles, you have not experienced pure joy in its fullness. So shout out there. Haven't had those in a minute, but we had a wonderful conversation, not talking about chocolate, but talking about this man's career as a premier ACC and NCAA national caliber runner. So with that, as promised, this will be a quick intro, but let's have a word from our sponsors before we fully dive into today's discussion. This episode is sponsored by The Amino Company. As I'm sure you know by now, Perform from The Amino Company is by far my favorite 100% science-backed product. And why is that? I'm glad you asked, because I am someone who works in an office job, sits in a chair for about 9 hours a day, and when I have that time in the evening to exercise, whether it's running or going to the gym, I want to get the most out of that time. And this product is great because it achieves three things I'm looking to do. Number one, it increases the peak strength and endurance of my muscles during exercise. Number two, it improves my cognitive focus, function, and concentration. And number three, it decreases recovery time by quickly rebuilding muscle tissue. If you want to check out any more of their science, go to aminoco.com/chiptime. And because you're one of our listeners, you'll get a 30% discount on any of the Amino Co. products when you use code CHIPTIME at checkout. And also, if you're interested, go to our episode from season 2 where we interview Dr. Robert Wolf, the developer of Perform from the Amino Company, a man who has run 62 marathons in under 2 hours and 30 minutes. Great guy to talk to, phenomenal conversation, phenomenal product. Make your way to aminoco.com/chiptime. Now, back to the show. Ladies and gentlemen, we are joined by a very special guest. It is one of the legends of Michigan high school cross-country and track running, now a member of the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Did some research to give an accurate resume here. He is an NCAA All-American in cross-country, the reigning ACC cross-country champion, a sub-4-minute miler, and a 13:26 5K runner. It is Notre Dame's Carter Solomon. Carter, thanks for being here.
Scott, thanks for having me on. I'm super excited to sit down and talk about running.
Absolutely. It's definitely a joy to have you here, to get to know more about your background. That's a great coffee mug, by the way.
You see that?
We got a Michael Scott coffee mug there. Well, it's going to
be
great to hear more about your background here. Maybe we'll have a little office trivia at the end or something. I'm a big fan myself. But, you know, if we hop back in the time machine before your NCAA competition, before maybe before high school, I'm not sure where it began exactly, but when was it that you really developed a passion for running, a desire to pursue it seriously? And was it something you enjoyed right away, or did it take some time to really settle in?
It definitely took some time to settle in. But for me, it started back in middle school. I think sixth grade was the first time I ran cross country. It was like the only sport you could do for the school. So I was signed up for it. I was super excited. And I was okay back then. It wasn't a super special runner. I was never the fastest kid at the school, stuff like that. And then in seventh grade, you know, I still had dreams of playing in the NBA. So I didn't run. I was trying to play basketball, right? And that dream, you know, came to a short end pretty quickly once I realized, you know, I wasn't 6'7" or whatever. But ran in cross country again in eighth grade, and that's kind of when I realized, oh, you know what, I'm kind of good at this. Ended up being one of the faster kids at the school in eighth grade, and I remember the league meet. I ended up winning like our league meet, like a very small district league meet. And my dad was like, man, you're going to run cross country in high school. You're going to be good. Like, this is going to be awesome. And I told him, like, dad, I don't want to run cross country anymore. This hurts. Like, this is so painful. Why would I continue to do this? Right. I don't like this. He's like, what? You're crazy. You just won this race. You got to go do it in high school. So I was like, all right, went on and ran in high school, and we had a pretty solid team. I had a lot of good mentors in high school and a lot of really fast teammates. So my freshman year went pretty smoothly, and I finished all state along with another teammate of mine. He was 2 years older than me at the time. And that's when I kind of realized, like, oh, wow, you know, running is something I actually like doing it. And I'm, you know, pretty good at it compared to the other guys in the state. I'm going to keep doing this thing. And then just kept going from there.
So what was it in your mind that sort of shifted from middle school, you were good, but you weren't enjoying it, to then high school where you had some early success, you had more mentors with the veterans on the team, but you said you started enjoying it then. How did that shift in your mind?
I think it was the people I ran with. And that's a reason why I chose Notre Dame at the end. You know, that's later down the road, but coming out of middle school and joining the high school team, there was really cool guys on the team. I really enjoyed being around them. And they really loved running. And I think that kind of fed that to me, like, running is great. You can be really good at this if you really try. And having that kind of environment, we had a great coach in high school. That environment really propelled me to, like, okay, I really like doing this. I like the people I'm doing it with. I still was playing basketball, and they all laughed at me. They're like, you're not going to keep playing basketball. And I ended up stopping my sophomore year of high school playing basketball. But they were a great group of guys, and, you know, I still keep in touch with them. But I think that's really the shift. Like, okay, you know, this is fun, kind of keeping it low key, to high school where we had a really good group of guys, and we ended up winning a state title in high school. So that was a lot of fun too.
Absolutely. Did you also get into track right away in high school as well, going with all three sports, cross, basketball, track? And between the two, did you find a preference between cross and track in those high school days?
Yep. So I started track in high school. A lot of guys I know were running track in middle school, but I never did that. I only ran cross country in middle school. Freshman year of high school was my first season of track. And immediately I'm like, okay, I love cross country way more than I love track. Just because of the team side of things, having that team and all chasing for something together was, and I preferred running in the grass, longer distance running in the grass, but that team aspect was what made it fun. And we had a good team, right? So that's, you know, winning races as a team, stuff like that. Track was still fun, enjoyed it. And it's something you kind of almost have to do if you want to be good at cross country. That's kind of how I felt my first 2 years. And then junior year, I really started enjoying track, running faster times. And then senior year got canceled because of COVID. But yeah, I didn't start running track till high school.
And, you know, it seems like you're more of a long distance specialist for sure. Cross country seems to be the preference for most people with your skills and your talents at the longer distances. But in high school, did you ever explore those middle distances? Maybe get thrown into some 4x4s or something? And how did that compare to your cross country and longer distance experience?
And I never did a 400 in high school. And I joke about, you know, how fast I could have run, make some number up, make people mad, whatever. But I did a number of 4x8s. We ran the 4x8 a lot because we had, you know, four guys that could run a solid 800. I think I split 157 maybe my junior year, sophomore year, which isn't barn burning by any means compared to, you know, some of the other guys in the state, but I never got to run a 400, unfortunately, but we did a lot of 800s and miles. From being a cross country distance guy, I kind of wish I did more like training for a 2 mile, but we trained really hard for the 4x8, and we had a really solid 4x8 1 year. But I was almost a middle distance track guy in high school, just because we were low mileage and doing a lot of speed workouts and stuff.
I got to say, like, looking back at my time in high school too, I missed the 4x8 going to college. A fun event. And of course you get the DMR indoors. So there's a new relay that pops up, but that outdoor 4x8 was really fun, especially if you were going toe to toe against another team that put all their best guys in it. And that was something I missed big time going to college. But I'm curious, because you mentioned it briefly, must have been tough your senior year. You have that final cross-country season in the fall, but then, you know, track was canceled due to COVID in 2020. Before reflecting on that cancellation and maybe some of the challenges there, how was that last fall for you? I got to say, I follow MHSAA pretty closely as an alumni myself. There were some crazy runners in my time, Grant Fisher especially, and then more in the middle distance side, Donovan Brazier, just guys who have blown up on the pro scene. But you had a pretty legendary senior season, and I believe one of the faster marks on that state championship course. And I'm familiar with the course too. That's one thing that's cool about Michigan, is that it's at Michigan International Speedway every single year for the cross country state championship. So how did you feel with how that senior season went and ultimately ending in that state championship? Did you feel confident going into that race? This is what's going to happen? Or was it more of just, let's see how this goes. I'm trusting in my training, and, you know, I'll live with whatever the result is.
Yeah, that senior cross country season was a lot of fun. And I remember, so we, as a program, we raced a lot every season. So starting like maybe even late August, we would start racing. And I remember just about every race, there was someone with me pushing, trying to, you know, win the race. So every race was exciting. And I remember, like, I was almost frustrated. I'm like, I just want, you know, like a dual meet or something. It would, you know, have to work. But every race there was some, but it made it more fun, right? And I think going into that state meet, I was on the line, or I was on the border of either like making a sit and kick race and let the other guys take the lead and then try to close down, or pushing from the gun. And I think I had raced everybody in that state final earlier in the season. So I kind of had a gauge of how, you know, they wanted the race and stuff. So coming off of regionals, I ran like a huge PR, and I was out there alone. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to try to do that again at state. Just go hard from the gun. And that was the coach like, okay, I'm okay with that. Let's do that. So we went for it from the gun. And then a couple guys went with, and then one guy even started breaking away after the 2 mile. And I was like, oh gosh, did I just bury myself going too hard from the beginning, right? And was able to muster up, you know, enough to catch him. And then the last half mile pulled away. So I still think about that coming home, that final stretch, and like having it all come together. Cause I think I was second the year before, and I was like, so close to the win, you know, it'd be nice to win one by the time you finish. So that was a great feeling coming home, that final stretch.
And being someone who prefers cross country, I'm curious on this too. Hilly courses, flat courses. Do you like gunning it for a fast time on a flat course? Or do you like the grind of the hilly courses where mentally you're like, I can break these guys, I have the strength to get there at the finish? I think of on the NCAA scene, some of these courses like Nuttycombe, where there's a lot of hills and whatnot in there, versus like your course, the Joe Piani course, where it's as flat as can be. Do you have a preference one way or the other?
I definitely prefer the hillier courses. I remember this year we ran a lot of hilly. We ran at Nutty Calm, and we ran the conference meet was at UVA, and that's a really hilly course. And then Oklahoma State's like the hardest course in the country, they say. And I remember we warmed up on the course before ACC Cross this year, and I'm like, Coach, this course is tough. And he goes, if you run 450 pace tomorrow, you're going to be just fine. Like, you're going to be top 10, top five in the conference. I'm like, oh, that's pretty slow compared to, you know, like Nutty Calm. We were running 444, 445 pace came out to be the average. I was like, oh gosh, we're going to run 2350. And then we ended up running under 23 minutes. And I was blown away by how fast. I think it was just that kind of course where you just have to grind better suits the kind of runner I am. Cause you get guys in track, they run 355 for a mile, but then, you know, they finish far back in cross country race. It's a totally different sport almost. Right. So I think that's where I kind of get that. I prefer cross country over track mindset from it. You know, it's who got the most guts, right?
I feel that. I wish I had the same mentality and abilities as you, being more of a middle distance guy myself. I was one of those people that would fade in cross country. And man, I liked the flat courses as less of a cross guy because, you know, the pictures would look a little better for the Instagram. I wouldn't be blowing up quite as much the team score. But I always respected the guys on my team who, even if they weren't quite as fast in track, not as much of fast twitch guys, who could just grind out those hilly courses. Always had so much respect for that. And you mentioned ACC Cross. We're going to circle back to that for sure, because that's a crazy story in and of itself. But I do want to get your reflections on the rest of that senior year, you know, of high school. You're coming off that state championship, really special season. You're probably looking forward to dropping your PRs from your junior track season. So I'm curious, had you already committed to Notre Dame at that point? What was it that made you want to run for the Irish? And then how was the rest of that senior year of high school with everything just getting flipped upside down?
Yeah, so that was a crazy year. And it started so normal, but ended up being so crazy. So sometime in the fall, I made my visits, my official visits I narrowed it down to four schools before the fall even started. And my last visit was Notre Dame in October, early October-ish. And I really liked the coach. You know, I really liked, you know, the academic strength of the school. I was like, all right, how do I fit with the guys? What are the guys like? That's like the last piece I wanted to, you know, kind of get a gauge for. Visit, all the guys are welcoming. All the guys are on the same page. We want to win conference titles. We want to win national titles in cross country. I'm like, all right, these are my guys. I really enjoyed hanging out with these guys. I almost committed on the visit, but ended up committing a week later. So that was middle of October I committed. So before cross country had even ended. So that was nice to kind of get that off of my chest or my shoulders, before the state meet, before Foot Locker my senior year. Then going into indoors my senior year, ran a couple of races, raced Hobbs Kessler in that indoor state mile. That was a lot of fun. And that's kind of right before COVID hit, and it was tough not being able to have that last track season. But I had already committed to Notre Dame. You know, I wanted to, you know, do some things on the track, but I had done cross country in the fall. So I wasn't overly upset, right? It was upsetting, sure. But you know, I had done a lot of the things that I wanted to do in high school running. So I was like, okay, I'm content. Let's transition to fall cross country. Let's build the mileage. Let's have a nice, good summer of training. And then, you know, see what we can do in cross country for Notre Dame in the fall.
Absolutely. No, that's, I feel like you made the best of that with how everything shuffled around. There's no way anyone could have been prepared for that.
Right.
But to already have committed, you know where you're going. Everyone's kind of going through that together. And thankfully, you were able to come in that fall of 20 And at least the ACC was one of the conferences that started racing and didn't take the fall off before that winter 21 championship. So before talking racing for your Notre Dame career, I'm just curious about the team as a whole, the campus life. What's the general vibe of the team? Are you guys pretty loose at practice, pretty joking around while obviously getting the things done you need to be? Or is it more business-like approach to it where you're really treating it a little bit more professionally? And also I'm curious, just in terms of academics, what are you studying there and what are you pursuing on that side of things?
Yeah, so I love Notre Dame on my visit, still love Notre Dame now. That's how I feel about it. It's a great school. You know, the culture or the community outside of the team even is a huge reason why I came here as well. And, you know, like they talk about the Notre Dame alumni network, stuff like that. But everyone on campus is just so welcoming and you feel as if you're at home. I don't recall ever being homesick my time here. So first year I was in the dorms. You have a random roommate your freshman year. So everyone was assigned a random roommate on the team. You can't get out of that. So we ended up getting along well. And, you know, that first year transition was I don't want to say smooth because it was definitely hard. But I loved Notre Dame, even though it was a hard transition. That's kind of how I would describe it. Academically, I'm studying aerospace engineering. So that's a huge reason why it was so hard freshman year trying to get acclimated to that kind of workload. It's still a struggle now, but what was the first part of that question? I lost my train of thought.
Yeah,
we're
just
talking
like,
about
just
campus,
the vibe of the team.
The team.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the team is pretty laid back day to day. I think that was the reason why I wanted to come. So we are very business-like when we have to be. But let's just say it's a Wednesday easy run. It's pretty laid back. You get your miles in, but you joke around, you have a good time, you carry on with the guys that you spend most of your time with, right? And I think that's something that I loved about my visit was it was super laid back, but it's also super very like business-like. We're taking care of business. You know, we're trying to do X, Y, and Z at the conference, the national meet. You know, we'll be ready when we get there. But now, like, if you're business year round, you're gonna burn yourself out, right? So having the ability to lay back and, you know, treat those easier days really easy and joke around and stuff like that. That's why I love being a part of this team, because everyone's in it for the team. No one's in it for themselves, right? And being able to joke around and carry on and have fun with that is what makes it fun, right?
Do you have any good Yard and a Goose stories? I know people are going to want to know if you do. And to give you a little context, I have met him once before at it was when I was in Eugene last summer during the World Champs, met him briefly, and he struck me as like the most chill human being to walk this earth. So I was curious if you had any stories about him.
He's such a great guy, right? I've got some stories, but one I'll share is I remember we were on fall camp my sophomore year, and me and the assistant coach went out to get some Krispy Kreme donuts, and we come back and our coach at the time he was so mad. He was like, "Well, you didn't run great. You don't deserve Krispy Kreme, right?" So I was like, then I ate one right in front of him, you know, to mess with him. He's like, "You're done. You're not having any more Krispy Kreme donuts, right?" The next day before our long run, Yard eats like four of them before the run. And I'm like, I'm just like looking at him. I'm looking at coach. I'm like, is coach not going to say anything, right? He's so laid back in all aspects of life. He eats Krispy Kreme, right? He eats ice cream. Like he's just, you know, very whatever kind of guy, go with the flow guy, right? So I thought that was really funny. But other than that, you know, so my freshman year, he was a senior and I was hurt a lot of my freshman year. So I didn't spend too much time with the team. And it was the COVID year. So that first like seven guys on a team are pretty isolated from the rest just to keep them healthy from COVID and stuff like that. And then we started getting closer my sophomore year, but then before then he took off to go pro. So I didn't have too much time with him here. You know, definitely have some other stories, but that's for another time. But that, I thought that one was great.
That's a good one.
So much junk food. Yeah.
No, that's a good one for sure. And I can envision that story. So that's, I knew people would want to know some behind the scenes there with having someone like him on the team, even for a limited period of time. But you mentioned being injured a lot of your freshman year. How was that transition? Was it really changing to the collegiate system? I believe it was Coach Carlson's system at the time. And also being that COVID year, do you feel like that gave you more, less pressure to be able to navigate that injury without a more regimented racing schedule? So what were those challenges like? And did you feel like that COVID year maybe offered some flexibility with getting around that?
Yeah. So I had three different injuries my freshman year, one in the fall, one in the winter, one in the spring. And I was never injured in high school. So that was very difficult for me. I didn't know how to respond. I didn't know how to react. And that first one came in the fall. I think it was the transition to higher mileage above all else. And being away from home, you know, learning how to do school, sleep, there's so many factors, right? But I think the biggest factor was I was a 30-mile week guy in high school. Now we're doing 55, 60, right? Because that's what you have to do, right? And you know, Carlson was very... He was very gradual with my build up through mileage, but I think it was still too much of a gap just to kind of get acclimated right away. So I think being a COVID year, for as hard as it was, it did kind of release the pressure. Like I could still redshirt cross country and come back and do a sixth year. I don't mean that's I don't really plan on doing that, but I could, right? So that gave a year of eligibility, like, okay, you know, you still have time to figure this out. And Carlson was a good mentor at the time. He was like, I still believe in you. You can still do this thing. You can be a great runner in this program. You just have to give it time and be patient. Right. And, you know, that stuck with me. And coming out of my freshman year after those injuries, I started building my mileage back up. And this would be my sophomore year fall. This is when I started struggling mentally with running. You know, I was healthy through the summer, come back in the fall, and I'm like, these guys are running 80 miles a week. They're so fit. There's 15 guys that run more miles than me, and I'm getting dropped in long runs and tempos. I'm like, how am I ever going to be where they are, right? And I was thinking, you know, school's hard, you know, running's hard. Do I even want to do this anymore? And I sat down with Dylan Jacobs one day. He was like, hey, let's talk. And he was like, I can see you're struggling, right? But you got to want this yourself. Like if you show up to practice because you feel, you know, you're being pressured into it, you're not going to be a good runner. But if you can make the decision and realize that you could be a really good runner yourself and want to show up to practice and want to work hard, then you can really take off in this sport. And I think that really sat with me that fall. And ended up making the conference lineup in cross country. Didn't run super hot at that race. And I was like, oh, you know, I made a good jump this fall, but you know, still so far behind the guys that run our top seven. And then that indoor season is when I started racing a lot better. Ran a solid 3K, ran a solid 5K, and then transitioned to that outdoor season. So that freshman year, I learned a lot about myself, being injured, you know, getting smoked in the classroom, right? And being away from home, learned a lot about myself, learned a lot about life in general, and, you know, kind of got my head straight my sophomore year. And, you know, after I talked with Dylan and stuff like that. And then my junior year is when I kind of really made that next level jump. So everything kind of clicked. You know, I'm more comfortable in the classroom. Doesn't mean I'm doing, you know, A straight A's, but I know what I'm doing a little bit better. And, you know, I've transitioned, you know, I run 75 miles a week now, no problems, right? So those are the building years. And I try to tell our freshmen now, like, hey, you're way ahead where I was. You guys are all super talented. Just have to be patient and give it time. And they hate hearing that. And I was like, I don't blame you, right? You don't want to hear that when you're just trying to be good, right? But that's the key to the sport, is being consistent. So I try to tell them that as much as I can, for as frustrating as it is to hear.
Sounds like Dylan Jacobs could have a coaching future with that wisdom he instilled in you.
Yeah, I kind of just dropped a lot we could talk about in that whole spiel. But Dylan was a great mentor for me, especially my sophomore year. So it was sad to see him go to Tennessee, but at the same time, I'm like, that's the best decision for him. If I was in his shoes, I would have done the same thing, right? So I still keep in touch with him a lot. And he's about to go pro, I'm sure. So
yeah,
he's killing it.
He is just won another championship. So he it's working out well for him too. But you had such a great way that you walked through that. And I always say, when it comes to the mental side of things, the juggling everything, class, running, emotions, everything that the college experience presents, I always tell people, now that I'm in like the corporate professional world, cross country, like doing collegiate athletics, prepared me more for the real world, or whatever you want to call that post-collegiate stage of life. It prepared me more than my classes did. Obviously, I'm an accounting finance guy, had to take those classes to learn to speak the language and deliver on the work front. But as far as interpersonal relationships, work-life balance, or in that stage of life, sports, student-athlete balance, being able to manage my time well and just make sure that I was balanced mentally, cross country and track really laid the groundwork for that. But it does come at the cost of some of those struggles that you mentioned. It's a bumpy road, and you really learn from experience. So it sounds like your sophomore year was a lot of growing through that. And it's cool to hear that it ended up with more of a love for the sport and the training, and you're sharing that now with some of the younger runners and the freshmen. So pivoting to your most recent season, your junior year, you said things are clicking at this point, but it did start with a coaching transition. So how was that for you once you're getting comfortable in this system to shift? And how much difference has there been from Coach Carlson to Coach Neal?
Yeah, so when that all happened, I was pretty distraught, because I was like, oh gosh, right? That was a big reason why I came to Notre Dame, was for Carlson. And this all happened like in the summer. So even the thought of even transferring was out the window, because it was way past the deadline. So I sat down with my dad, and my dad was like, hey, they can hire a coach that's really good, knows what he's doing, and you're going to like him a lot. Just give it time and see who they hire, and then go from there. I said, okay, that's great advice. We hire Coach Neal out of Furman, and we clicked right away. Like he came into the program and he fit in right away. Every single guy in the locker room loves him, loves his training. The training hasn't changed much. We can talk details about it. But it's just been a super smooth transition. And in the fall, he was really excited about, hey, you ran 1350 last spring. What can we do this fall? You made a good mileage jump this summer. That's what he kept talking about in the fall. And then I ended up running what I did in cross this season. And then now he's like, okay, that was probably more than what we were both expecting, right? So now we've got a great relationship, him and I. Balance of coaching, him being my coach and a friend almost, right? And he's fit right in. The training's great. I feel like I finally clicked with the higher mileage, and he's the workouts haven't changed much, right? Which has been nice. They've changed a little bit. But in cross country, it really is just threshold and long runs, more or less, right? So he can't really change it too much. But he's great. The transition's been great. And I'm pleasantly surprised with how all the guys are taking it, especially the younger guys, even older guys. So he's been a great addition to the program. And Sparks too. He's always kind of been there. he handles more of the girls, right? But he hired Neil, and Neil just basically took over the men right away. And it's just been, it's been super smooth. It was, we didn't finish as high as we wanted to in cross nats, for a multitude of reasons. But I know, you know, having him for a year, we've got a stellar freshman class. We're going to have some grad transfers coming in. And I think the biggest thing is he will have been here for a year by the time we're back in the fall. And I think that's going to be huge for us. So it's super exciting time. Program's not going anywhere. We're all really excited about it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you guys are set up for success for sure. Pretty young team right now, yeah, on the cross side. Some really talented freshmen in the fall from following it. So that's cool to hear that it was a good transition. I feel like a good coach to good coach transition, even though on paper sounds like it would be easy or smooth, it doesn't always work out that way, because there's the relational side of things, there's the culture side of things. Typically the coach who's outgoing has been established and a part of the program for a long time. In my experience, I kind of went from a bad coach to good coach transition, which obviously is great. And we were able to do things that we never even really thought we could do. But good to hear that that was a smooth transition. And you even, by your own admission, said you were able to do things in cross country this past fall that you maybe didn't even expect to be able to step up and achieve. And we got to talk about this conference championship, ACC's. You said it's at UVA on this hilly course. I remember watching it on TV, and you already talked about the pacing strategy going in and everything, but what I really want to pick your brain on is the end of that race. What could have possibly been going through your head when it turned out into an all-out sprint between you and Parker Wolf from North Carolina? And this has not been the last time that you guys have battled each other in some sense. And what was so fascinating about it, I'll give you my vantage point just watching the race, and then we'll get your first person view. I'm a big Mario Kart guy myself, love me some Mario Kart. And I'm watching this race, and it's almost like you guys both had some mushrooms, and you used one and surged to the front, and then he used one and surged to the front. And it looked like a definitive move. Like, okay, I guess he used his gear last. Wolf's going to win the championship. And then it's like you pulled out like a star or something, surge back to the front, win the ACC championship. What was going through your mind at the end of that race?
Man, so this fall reminded me of like my senior cross country season, just way above expectations, right? So going into that race, I knew from Nuttycombe, he was top five, top six at Nuttycombe, and I was ninth or tenth. So coach was like, you know, hey, you're a contender to win this thing, but Parker Wolf is legit, right? He said, let's go into this race and go for a top five finish so we don't blow up and, you know, lose points for the team. I said, that's a great plan. We'll do that. Top five would be huge jump from last year. So we're in the race and we come through the mile in like 4:30. I'm like, okay, 4:50 paces out the window. I had an accelerator, right? But I felt good, man. And come through 5K in about 14:30, and I'm still feeling super relaxed, almost like a tempo. And that's kind of how you want to feel in the race like that, right? And we hit 6K and there was a hill, and Parker made a move, and I said, all right, that's the move to win this thing. So I followed suit and I got up on his shoulder from the field, except for there was another guy from Wake Forest still with us. Hit 6K and I'm like, I feel too good to not push the pace. So that was the decision I made. And it was against what coach's plan was before the race. And we laughed about it after. He's like, you're lucky that worked. I said, I know I am. But we hit 6K and I said, all right, I'm going to start dropping the hammer. And I start pushing the pace and I break away a little bit. I'm like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? I'm out here. There's a mile to go ish. And I'm pushing from way out. and we hit 7K and he's back on my shoulder. I'm like, oh gosh, that didn't work, right? He's so strong, right? We're back to square one. And I think the other kid had fallen a little bit. So it was just me and him at this point with the K to go. We make the turn. He starts pulling away from me with maybe 600 to go. And I'm like, oh, I just got to hold on. I can't let too much of a gap form. And I saw my coach right before, at the end of that race, there was a downhill, an uphill, and then the flat finish. Right before the downhill, I saw my coach and he said, start sprinting now. I'm like, I don't know if I can do that. We're so far out. And I'm like, so we go down this downhill. Parker had a pretty solid gap on me at the time. And we're flying down this downhill and we hit the base of it and we start the uphill. And at the base of the uphill, my dad was standing at the base of the uphill and he just, I don't even know what he said. He just started yelling and he was just going crazy. He was like, something like, you can do this, like just go, right? And I looked him in the eyes as I went by him and I just felt like this surge of energy. And as we start this uphill, I just start, you know, making ground. I pick up the knees, pumping the arms. And by the time we hit the top of the uphill, we're back shoulder to shoulder. And I'm like, holy smokes. And I've got all this momentum. I just made up this ground, right? So we're just, there's 50-ish meters to go. And maybe 100. But we're just, it's just a full out sprint at the end of an AK. It's just brutal, right? I don't even remember. Like, I'm just almost blacking out at this point. And I found just enough to get him at the end. And I remember crossing the line. I was like, holy smokes, you know, I can't believe I just caught him and did that, right? And I turned around and he was right there. We gave each other a huge hug. And that reminded me of like an MMA fight. You know, the guys go the distance. No one wins outright. And, you know, it comes to a decision. And it's just, then, you know, the guys embrace each other because they know they just put everything on the line. And it was just a dogfight. And that's how it felt at the end of that race. And he's a great sport. And I feel like that was something, you know, going to that level in a race for that level of, or that magnitude of a race. It was special. And having my parents there was pretty awesome too. So
it was,
that race was crazy.
Extremely entertaining to watch as well. I remember watching that. And one thing we do on the Stride Report with the end of each season, cross, indoor, and outdoor, is we have some categories for like end of season awards. And one of them was most exciting performance, or maybe it was best performance. And the criteria is like excitement, element of surprise, dominance, things like that. And I know I voted for that race just because it's rare to see that tight of a finish in cross country. A little more common on the track, you know, still very exciting, but cross country, especially those hilly courses, is when you break people. And a lot of times the top runners pulling away with some level of comfort at the end. So that was a crazy one to watch. And you ultimately followed that momentum to nationals. And of course, it's another grinder of a course. You mentioned, I know the general narrative of that Oklahoma State course is it's the hardest course in the country. Would you say that's accurate? And what was your experience racing on that stage overall?
I haven't raced. I'm not sure what other courses they say are that difficult. Honestly, the one at UVA, it wasn't nearly as bad as Oklahoma State, but it was pretty hilly. So I remember warming up the day before the race on the Oklahoma State course, and I was almost dumbfounded. I'm like, we're actually running these hills tomorrow twice. It's like a two loop course. I'm like, this is going to be absolutely brutal. And that the national meet was at that course 2 years ago. And the winning time Mance broke away from the field. And the winning time was mid 29s. I think four guys maybe broke 30 minutes. So I think that showed how difficult of a course it was. Those that level of guy, like, I think the fifth place finish was 30 flat. Like, that's how hard the course was. So everyone was a little bit scared of the course. We come through 5K at the national meet in like 14:20 or something absurd. I'm maybe not that fast, but really fast. I'm like, holy smokes, we're flying, right? I think that the top three guys that broke away were like 850 through 2 miles or something obscene. And we held on. I think I came through 8K in the time that I ran at Nuttycombe weeks before. Like, it was just fast from the gun, and it didn't slow down. I think that's kind of when I faded. The lack of experience and mileage is what I chalked it up to. But, you know, that'll come with time, you know, increasing mileage and gaining that experience was huge, right? So that was definitely a tough course, and those hills were absolutely brutal. And I started going backwards a little bit at 8K, and I was worried. I was like, just hold on, don't blow up. You know, my form was all over the place. I just felt so weak from the hills. But it ended up being a pretty solid day. But that was definitely the toughest course I've ever run.
That's good to know. And that's definitely unique to just have a schedule that seems to have so many grinders in there. UVA, Oklahoma State, they're not doing these championship races on the flat courses, at least in 2022. So definitely, it seems like they did the year before, at least from your team's standpoint. You guys hosted ACCs, and then Florida State had the national meet, but different challenges in those environments as well. But transitioning out of a conference championship, an All-American finish, you get into this recent indoor season. How was the transition, and really just in general, when you switch from more of the threshold stuff in training for cross country, do you really keep that same blueprint for longer distance track work? I never ran anything longer than 3K, so for me it was much different. You're doing more fast twitch, 200 repeats, tightening the screws, mileage goes a bit lower. But how is that shift for you, and especially going from a hilly 10K experience to at one point breaking four in the mile? What was the change like in this indoor season? And I'm even curious to hear about that mile, your thoughts going into and executing to break four.
Yeah, so I keep coming back to, this is the first year where I've kind of gotten to the point where I'm, you know, at the higher level in the NCAA relatively, right? So it's still very new to me, right? I was, you know, barely making the conference meet my sophomore year. Now we're, you know, up in the front packet and NCAA cross, right? So coming off of NCAA cross, I shut it down for a week or two and then went home for winter break, essentially. And that was a 4-week period where it was great to be home and just train. But at the same time, I had no idea how fit I was because I wasn't, you know, really running with anybody else, wasn't doing any special track workouts. It was just long runs and tempos, kind of how it was across. So come back to campus, and that first week, Neil was like, all right, we're going to do a really hard track session. We're going to do 5 or 6 by K at, you know, 245-ish, and then the last two we're going to rip. And I ended up running like 238 and then 231 the last two Ks. So I'm like, okay, I'm in pretty good shape still. Coming after this workout, I'm like, wow, I was super excited. We're 4 weeks out from the Mayo Mile at this time. So then from that workout to Mayo Mile, it was just threshold and longer runs. And we did some speed, almost just strides, basically. We're a very strength-based program. So just getting those strides in to kind of get those fast twitch muscles, you know, wake them up a little bit, right? So going into that mile, that was my first race of the indoor season at home. And it was being paced like 226 through the K. I'm like, holy smokes, this is gonna be fast, right? And Nick Foster at Michigan, you know, we raced a bunch in high school, kind of rivals, right? He was coming to race this Mayo Mile. I'm like, all right, the excitement's there, the energy's there, the home crowd's there. Let's do this thing. My ultimate goal was to break four, and then the goal was to win the race as well. So going into the Mayo Mile, I think we were a bit back. The pacer was great, but none of us went with the pacer. I don't know why. I didn't really know what I was doing. This is my first mile race. So we hit 1200 in about 3 flat and just started going. I'm like, all right, there's the move. I'm going to try to cover it as best I can. 200 meters to go. They kind of gapped me a little bit. Then I started closing the gap just a little bit with 100 to go, but it wasn't enough real estate to make up. So ended up third. But with a huge new mile PR. So that was a great way to start the indoor season. A lot of fun breaking four. especially at home. So that was my major goal this year. You know, if we're that fit, let's go break four.
Do you have any, did that race create any aspirations to pursue the mile anymore, or are you all in on that 5K? And within that question, you know, got to hear about your experience at Boston running the 5K, having everything click there. I'm sure after that happened, it would be hard to argue a switch to a shorter event. But I'm just telling you, as a miler myself, I'm always trying to get more people to specialize in the event just because I enjoyed it.
Yeah, so I ran 357 low, and that was almost the threshold this year for NCAAs was 356 low. And I thought, like, wow, in my first mile, I ran that in a rather unevenly paced race. You know, maybe we take a crack again at it and try to run 356 low, 355 high. I think that was in the cards. But we had planned on going for it in the 5K at Boston this whole time. And I'm like, okay, we're fit. Let's get into a good race, great pacing, fast track. Let's just rip it. So going into that 5K, I was racing a former teammate, actually. And he was trying to run the exact same time. It was about 13:25. And I just sat behind him the whole race. And then we were way back in the pack. This was an interesting race. Super loaded field, a lot of like post-collegiate guys. And I'm way back in the pack with the collegiate guys that were in the race. And we're clocking forward 4:16 minute per mile pace. And we hit 2 miles, and I feel like everyone just disappeared. I don't know what happened, but the 15 guys that were in front of me felt like there was only 3 guys in front of me. Because we kind of worked our way up that last mile, and we were passing people. And then closed really hard over the last 800 meters, and I ended up finishing, I think, 5th in the race. I was like, there was 18 guys ahead of me at the beginning of this race, and I feel like I passed 3 or 4. It was so strange. I'm like, where did all these guys go? But I think there were pacers, other guys dropped out. I don't know what happened, but I wouldn't say I was surprised it went the way it did, because that's what we were training for. But after that mile, I was like, no, maybe I am a bit of a miler this indoor season. And then thought maybe, okay, I could run a fast 3K, but to do it in the 5 off of, I don't want to say mile training, but I was doing lower mileage. So that was pretty exciting to, you know, to come piece together a 13:26 5K. You know, Boston, there's an asterisk next to it, right? But that was a good confidence booster, and it was fast enough to hold on to qualify for NCAAs this year. So,
well, you make the Boston joke there about the asterisk. Tell me about that track. Is it really that much faster?
So I've only run it once now, and I remember doing a stride right before the race. I'm like, wow, this feels really, really smooth. And it could be placebo, right? People are like, oh, the track's so fast.
That's my theory.
That's your theory. Yep. So I don't know exactly. I think there's pieces to it. It's like when you go to Boston, you get into a train, you hit the paces perfectly, and you just go, right? It's not tactical kind of racing. It's run a fast time, and that's just what you do. And we were clicking perfect 32 seconds for 200 meters. And it just felt smooth. And I mean, the air's still dry in there. It's not like it's a special environment where like you can breathe super well, right? Is it faster than most outdoor tracks? Probably. But I think like a 5K at the end of April in Southern California, there's no reason you couldn't run faster. So, and there's something with like the geometry of the track. I watched a video on it. It's not perfectly symmetrical or something like that, but which I'm sure helps. So I think it's definitely fast, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's like a super, super track, I guess. So I don't know.
I've always wondered about that. It has the super track reputation for sure. And guys like Grant and Woody have really added to that. So yeah. and Yared recently as well in that 3K. Yep. But I got one more indoor track question before sort of looking forward to the future and closing up here. ACC Indoor Championships. You guys go to Louisville. They have that new facility. I hate to be brutally honest, but it looks kind of like a prison cell. It's all gray. I don't know who signed off on that. They could have made that a little better for the fans and probably the athletes as well. But I have a bone to pick with the indoor finals for the distance events where they do the two heats. There's, you know, the unseeded section of the 5K, and then there's the seeded section with the people who come in with the faster times, and then they just merge them together in the results as if it's one race. And of course, for your race this year, you're in the seeded section. You win the seeded section, another battle with Parker, but it just went out slower, although it finished faster, it went out slower than the other section. And so I think it slotted you at like sixth or something after it was all said and done. I understand why they do that. You know, they don't want to pack 25 people on a small track. It probably has something to do with that. But to me, you're the ACC 5K champ just because you won the tactical race and that battle at the end. So how do you feel about that multi-section approach to those conference championships?
So, one, the fact that they do it that way, it is what it is, right? It's, you can't change, you know, they've always done that, right? But two, we knew how fast they had run. This is kind of a funny story. We knew how they ran 1350, we'll say, in the fast section, and we're warming up, ready to go to the line before our race. And I turned to Parker. I said, "Hey, we're going to kind of have to run a little bit faster." I get, you know, I joking around, and he's like, "Yeah, I know." And there was rumors going around that Notre Dame guys were going to help pace me to run a faster time than 1326 because I was 15th at the time, maybe 16th. So I was borderline going to get into the blaze. And people were asking Coach Neil, like, "Hey, are you guys going to hammer this 5K? Like, what's the plan?" And Neil said, "No, we're not doing that. We're running a tactical race. We're running the way we want to. We're not going to run 1320. And they're like, okay. Race starts. I got to the front somehow. I was not my plan, but I'm leading. So I'm like, I'm confident with my leg speed. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to jog. I'm going to be in the front middle lane. I'm just going to jog. And that's exactly what I did. And no one wanted to take it. And we come through the mile in 440 or something. And okay, this is about we were running like 15 minute 5K pace for the first mile or something like that. First K at least. And in my head, I'm like, okay, you know, this is going to be hard to cut down, but we're going to do it. You know, no one was saying anything. I figured, okay, the coaches have done the math. We're going to get cranking here soon. Shanklin from NC State takes the lead. Now, here we go. We're going to start hammering, right? Nope. Still running 445-ish mile pace. And we come through 2 miles in like 920, which is like 1430 pace or something. And I'm like, this is impossible. We're not going to do it. I was so mad during the race. I was like, once I realized there's just, we have to run like a 355 last mile to do this thing, to run 1350. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. So the UNC guys took it, and then they started like trying to, squeeze it, like squeeze the pace down from far out. And I just sat on them like glue, right? And then with 200 to go, I just, you know, let the doors open. But I finished the race, and I was like, I'd run like 14 flat, and I knew I didn't win. And I look over and I see my parents. They're jumping up and down. And I'm like, stop it. We didn't win. And they're like, what? And they explain it to them. And it was heartbreaking. You know, that's how I would put it. Right. And Coach Neil was very positive about it. He said, hey, we did exactly what we wanted to. It's we couldn't do anything about the first heat running 1350, stuff like that. And then, you know, I kept hearing people talk about it. And then we found out that every other Power 5 conference 5K was slower than what we had run in the slow heat. So like, it's very normal to run 14-10 to 13-50 to win the conference meet, right? So that frustrated me too, because I was like, okay, those were all one heat and they ran 14-07, right? So it's just, you know, it's the way she goes sometimes, you know. It's just, and then it took a few days for, you know, for this thing to kind of go away, but, you know, and I found out that I qualified for nationals like the next day, so I was pretty excited for that, ready to get back on the training horse for that. So, but it was definitely frustrating at the time, but, you know, you move on and take it as it is and just keep going.
Yeah, understandably frustrating, but it sounds like your coach had a good mentality about it in reassuring you. You know, you executed what was in front of you. It was just no one really was running a fast pace in that one. And also, like you said, it's the way they've always done it. You know, if anything, the argument is that you have the benefit of knowing what time needs to be run, but racing is racing. And
right,
that doesn't mean it's automatically going to get to a point where you're going to have the opportunity to run under that time if it's tactical. But still, you still had a legendary indoor season for sure. I mean, huge PRs in both those events, national qualifier as well in the 5K. And I know we've been running long here on time. It flies by for me. But as we look to the future, we look at this outdoor season that has just begun. Some of the guys from my team were at the Raleigh Relays this weekend. I think some from your team were as well. What is going to be the specialty? Are you sticking with the 5K? Are you maybe giving the 10K a shot? And what are we hoping to accomplish here in the spring?
Yep. So I didn't run Raleigh this weekend. I was a little bit banged up through the indoor season. So after nationals, we kind of just shut it down for a couple of days, and we're going to not necessarily slowly build back up, but take our time to get back into racing. So in about a month, I'll run a 5K down at Wake Forest just to try to run 13:35 to 13:45, hit the regional qualifier and just be done with that. And I think the plan is to do a 4x mile at Penn Relays just to have some fun, you know, go out there and see what we can do in that. Because I think we have four guys, 4:02 or faster. So that could be a lot of fun mixing up with other collegiate teams. And then conference, still haven't decided what we're going to do for conference yet. And then for nationals, the goal is the 5K, but we might sprinkle in a 10K here. So we'll have to wait and see. But a little bit of time to decide what we're going to do. But for now, the goal is still the 5K for nationals.
Awesome, man. It's going to be fun to follow that for sure. We got to have one curveball question before I let you get out of here, something to sprinkle in a little more of the personality. I see a guitar on your back wall there. So the question is, you know, are you a guitar player regularly? If so, how long have you been doing that? And if not, if you're not a regular guitar player, what's some of your favorite music? And, well, I guess either way, if you are a guitar player or not, what do you like to jam to when you're getting mentally ready for some of these big cross and track meets?
Yeah, so I own a guitar and I know a few chords. That's about the extent of that, right?
It looks good in the Zoom background, so you fooled
me. Yeah, right. It's part of the background. But no, I started playing in high school just to kind of mess around with it and see where it could go. It hasn't really gone anywhere, but it's fun just to kind of pick up once in a while and, you know, try to play some songs. But the music that I like, huge like alternative rock guy. So trying to play those songs on guitar is fun and stuff like that. But before a race, I listened to a lot of rap, stuff like that. Kind of basic, right? But I like all genres of music. But to fire up before a race, definitely good rap, maybe some hard alternative rock, Linkin Park, stuff like that. And it's great. Coach Neil loves Linkin Park too. So we were on the way to indoor nationals before the race. We were jamming Linkin Park in the car. So that was fun. But Yeah, I think my dad really got me into like 90s grunge, alternative rock, stuff like that. So that's kind of where my heart is.
Love that answer, man. We did an episode probably about a year and a half ago called How to Feel Jacked as a Distance Runner in the Weight Room. And it centers around Linkin Park music. You got to have some Hybrid Theory on.
The guys I room with are like, this music's terrible. He's just screaming. And I'm like, I told that to Coach Neil. He's like, no. I was like, no, if you get it, you get it. He's just so good, right? But if you don't get it, you don't get it. It just sounds like screamo.
It's art. It's art if you get it. It gets you ready to run through a brick wall.
Yeah.
Well, Carter, thanks for your time, man. This has been an absolute blast getting to connect. Really glad we were able to do this to not only reflect on your accomplishments over the last couple of years here, but also to look forward to the future and just get to know you better as well. So thanks for joining us today, man.
Yeah, this has been a lot of fun. I could sit down and talk about running forever. Thank you, Scott. This has been great.
As we wrap up the show, first want to thank our sponsors from the Amino Company. Make sure to go to aminoco.com/chiptime to check out their science and pick up some of their products with a 30% discount when you use code CHIPTIME at checkout. Also want to thank Carter Solomon for his time and wish him the best of luck this incoming outdoor season. If you would like to contact us, send me an email, chiptimepod@gmail.com, chiptimepod@gmail.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave a 5-star rating on Apple or Spotify. That 5-star button does need your touching. And if you would like to join the Chip Time Strava group, all you need to do is follow me on Strava. So thanks for listening. Keep working hard, and we'll see you next time.